Chapter 1. Inflorescence, a group or cluster of flowers arranged on a main stem. 12 years later. Aunt Carol Ann's pleasant reaction to the devil's tongue blooming near the Cupid fountain should have served as fair warning. At 7:30 a.m. on Monday morning in late July, Carol Ann Spencer minced through the back gate of the Cupid Botanical Gardens in 4-inch heels, a size 4 gray pencil skirt, and a lemon-yellow blouse with capped sleeves that showed off her toned biceps. Even though she was over 50, her hair was still a soft honey brown, achieved by the alchemy of her colorist. Carol Ann carried an oversized canvas tote bag to collect the letters that had been deposited over the weekend in the locked white wooden box with "Letters to Cupid" stenciled on it in red. To the right of the letterbox was a list of rules posted on a glassed-in bulletin board. 1. All letters should be submitted using an anonymous pseudonym. 2. Letters will be answered within 1 week. 3. Letters of a sexually graphic nature will not be published. 4. The letters are for entertainment purposes only. 5. Cupid is not to be held responsible for what the letter writers do with the advice. Lace Bedingfield, Ph.D., was kneeling in the soil behind the 5-foot stone fountain of the Roman god of love, enthusiastically pruning Hersper aloe parviflora, commonly known as red yucca, even though it wasn't actually yucca. She wore military-grade knee pads over her blue jeans and a long-sleeved red plaid cotton shirt. She tilted her head back far enough to watch Carol Ann from underneath the wide brim of her straw hat as she clicked the wrought iron gate closed behind her. Usually, it was her cousin Natalie who retrieved the correspondence for the tri-weekly meeting of volunteers who answered the letters from the lovelorn. What was their aunt doing here instead? Her glasses had slid down on her nose, and she pushed them back up with the pinky finger of her gloved hand. Sweat beaded her brow, but she barely noticed. Perspiration was a tool of the botanist's trade. Carol Ann's heels clacked against the terracotta pavers. She cast a sideways glance at the flies swarming the devil's tongue blooming in the large mosaic pot. Lace's new assistant, Shasta Green, had insisted they decorate the terracotta planter with remnants of other broken pots to create the mosaic. Shasta's rationale had been, "If it's gonna smell like a dead rat, it at least needs a pretty pot to bloom in." She had to admit that while Shasta might not be the deepest bulb in the garden, she did have an eye for design. After she twice caught the girl sleeping in the potting shed, she'd hired Shasta and let her stay in the garage apartment over the craftsman-style house that Lace had recently bought on Manlow Avenue. Shasta claimed she was 19, but Lace had her doubts. The kid was probably a runaway, but Lace respected other people's privacy and hadn't prodded her for details about her circumstances. Better to have her working where Lace could keep an eye on her than slipping around getting into trouble. And when the girl had announced, "Name's Shasta, like the daisy, Chrysanthemum maximum. My mama used to work in a flower shop and she named me after the hardiest flower she could think of," it had cinched the deal. Carol Ann cocked her head and studied the devil's tongue with rapt interest. Lace expected her aunt to twist her face into a mask of revulsion and whine, "What's that disgusting smell coming from that hideous-looking thing?" But her nose didn't even twitch at the fetid stench. Was something wrong with her olfactory perception? That had to be it. She'd lost her sense of smell. To Lace, the aroma of Amorphophallus konjac, a.k.a. devil's tongue, a.k.a. voodoo lily, a.k.a. snake plant, was the sweet smell of success.